Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hello, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. It's a cold, cold February, but we've managed to bring in the playwright who came in from the cold. We have a guest, Mr. Michael Beatty, who's been a friend of ours for a really long time. He is the president, founder, et cetera, of RMB Productions, and also the executive director of Lifetime Education and Research Network. Welcome to Theater Geeks, Michael.
Thank you.
Tell us, okay, we were talking about this just a moment ago, but what's RMB Productions and what is L is the Lifetime Education and Research Network, which we will now use the acronym LEARN to refer to.
RMB Productions started in the early 1980s, and it's a company that I set up to be able to do the kind of projects that I felt were important, that were projects in the fine arts and media, in writing.
Okay.
And LEARN, a Lifetime Education and Research Network, is a 501c3 not-for-profit. Because I spent my career working with not-for-profit organizations, I wanted to have a not-for-profit that would do the kind of projects that I was interested in, and set up in such a way that all it would do is work on individual projects. There's no staff, there's no expense, only money that's spent is used for individual projects.
Okay.
Some of the things that we've done are a program called Best Stories, which taught English and the fine arts to grades 4 through 8 in various school systems, and a book that was book video project that was just completed this last year called A Regional History of the Fine Arts in the South Bend Area.
Right.
And that involved various universities and individual organizations in the Elkhart South Bend area, and was a video, actually 3 different videos with 11 different interviews of people with long-time involvement, and a book that highlighted the various different organizations, as well as 100 different artists that were important to the area.
Okay. So you, can we find out more about the details of these specific projects at a website somewhere or?
Yes. rmbcreative.com.
Okay. So that's, we can follow up on that if you're interested. What we're talking about today is a project that it's currently in process, but it's part of a larger, from our standpoint, a larger series of events that commemorate the 150th anniversary of the end of the Civil War. Now, this was something that we kind of ran with from our home theater, based on a suggestion from one of our previous Theater Geeks guests. Mm-hmm. And what we have now is a series of events going from starting from February, actually starting on the 15th of February with a symphony concert, which incorporated theater, and goes through June, which is when your organization, the Acting Ensemble, which is another group that you're with, is going to be presenting a historical work based on the Civil War and also based on local figures in the Civil War. And what we're curious about, of course, is obviously this is a kind of local interest for us, but it's also should be of interest to any organization that's looking at producing A, original works, and B, original works that are based on history and real people. And so that's kind of what we wanted to find out about. What got you going on this initially?
Initially, it actually came from one of the board members of LEARN.
Okay.
And it was someone who's been involved in the study of history for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. It was over lunch about a year ago that we sat down and talked about the Civil War and the coming end of the coming anniversary of the Civil War. And what did that mean for our community? what did that mean in terms of the country? And there's obviously been a lot of stuff and a lot of good stuff that's been done on the Civil War. But what about for our area? What did mm-hmm. that mean for the heartland? And it, right. was it different here than it was in most of the things that you see? And I think that that unique perspective is important. I think it's important for in terms of any community or any organization that wants to put something together is to look for what's unique, not to try and duplicate mm-hmm. something else.
Right.
Well, how did you decide what format you wanted to take this in?
I've been doing a number of adaptations recently, and I'm doing a series of Dickens adaptations mm-hmm. for the stage. And I wanted – my first thought is that I wanted to produce this as a play. And then what happened, because I think in large part because of my background and my background in education, I added a television production to the play. In other words, the play will be taped and broadcast, and then added to that a educational component that will be able to be used in schools.
Like a teaching guide
okay. that can go along either with the play being viewed in the classroom mm-hmm. or the script being used to produce the play itself within the school.
So that just from a mechanics standpoint, LEARN is the organization that essentially secured the funding through grants, et cetera, and then LEARN finances, you know, by in turn, the actual production.
That's correct.
Okay. So how do you approach something like this? We were just talking at breakfast. Yeah, there's 2,000 books written about Lincoln alone, just massive amounts of information about him, quite a few different interpretations of who he was, of course. And yet, you know, you get it to local stories, there's not so much, and a lot of what's written locally, you know, is maybe fairly dry. It's not often that a play gets produced or, you know, something that's entertaining, that has an entertainment component, gets produced about local stories. So how did you approach the story that, or the stories that you're going to be telling in this?
I think that it's important. I think the first thing that you have to do is decide what kind of a project you want to put together. Mm-hmm. If you're an individual or if you want to, if you're an organization and you have an individual that you want to give this project to them to produce, I think you have to look at what is it that you're able to research yourself? What is it that you're able to put together yourself? And what is it that you need help with? Mm-hmm. Where is the collaboration going to happen? Because it has to be, in my mind, it has to be a collaborative project.
Right.
If you're writing a novel, you can do that by yourself. If you're trying to produce a play, you better understand that it's a collaborative process to be able to
right.
do that. So for me, I started talking to people that I felt had more knowledge in the history field than what I did. One of the first people that I talked to was a man named John Charles Bryant. One of John Charles's ancestors was an African-American who was in the Civil War, went in as a private, came out as a sergeant, and then was a barber in Mishawaka. And his daughter was the first child to African-American child to graduate from Mishawaka High School and first African-American to graduate in the northern half of Indiana. He had a son that graduated from high school as well and then went on to college and was a dentist. So Elijah Powell was well-known in Mishawaka, was one of only two African-American families mm-hmm. there, really was a success story in terms of what happened with the Civil War and what he was able to accomplish. But at the same time, and for me, this was important, was to ask questions and not necessarily have answers for those questions.
Right.
So for Elijah, he was successful, but he became a barber because it was one of the few things that he could actually get in and do as a professional, as an African-American. His daughter and son and children could be successful, but only up to a certain level. His son applied to schools and was rejected because of his race, for example, to colleges, before he finally found one that he was accepted at. So his children could graduate from white high schools and be friends with other white students, but only up to a certain point. So, yes, there was success, but that success only went so far.
Mm-hmm.
So that with John Charles was the first person I talked to.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to some of the local museums. I looked at what kind of characters would I want to have and started to do that research myself and started to look for other people that could help.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is this eventually going to be an ensemble production, or are you doing like a series of character vignettes on the different people, as you said, that you found were relevant?
It'll be an ensemble event. Okay. And I think that's a very good question, because instead of then just looking for individuals mm-hmm. that are going to stand by themselves, what individuals could I find that are going to be able to relate to each other within the production itself?
So they'll communicate with each other, even though in real life they might not have met?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And that's why it's a docudrama.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So it's different from taking, and I think that that this is something that's done on television more than it's done in the theater, where you're trying to present history, even though it's your own viewpoint, mm-hmm. where every fact is checked, every statement is true as it can possibly be. You put 5 years of research into the project. So this is a drama. This has to be able to have that component of it. And you have to be able, therefore, to tell a story and establish some kind of a storyline.
So you have like a narrative thread that will connect all these things together.
Yes, and it really does. And I felt this from the very beginning. It has a meta theater feel to it. So Elijah Powell will be our narrator. So I think, of course, of our town in terms of being the classical way that this is kind of presented. So we'll use the...
that's a good model.
Yes, of course.
I was going to say, steal from the best in a way. Yeah. I don't mean steal.
No, it is stealing, and you've got to stand on the shoulders of those people came
absolutely
before you. I think we'll have things that will happen in the barber chair, for example, because in the 1800s, if you could afford it, you didn't stay home and get shaved or shave yourself.
Oh, right.
You went to the barber shop. So the rumors, the gossip, the news happened at the barber shop, and it's a perfect way for us to be able to do that. So one of the big challenges for me is there's going to be a number of female characters. Well, how do I interrelate those? And you don't have in the 1800s women going up and talking to men, or men going up and talking to women. So how am I going to put that together?
Yeah.
And the way that I ended up being able to do, there's a couple of different things that we can do. They actually had fairs where they would gather supplies for hospitals at that time. It was before the Red Cross, and so this was a way to be able to get much-needed supplies to the hospitals for during the war. And that'll be an opportunity for our women to participate. I'm also going to have one of our characters is Sister Angela from St. Mary's College. And Sister Angela was just this incredible person, Eastern establishment aristocracy. And decided at the age of 28 she was going to become a nun and was going to go into an order up in Chicago, stopped in this area, and to visit a brother who was a priest at Notre Dame. And Father Soren and her brother convinced her to stay at St. Mary's. And St. Mary's was then up in Niles. She grew that, moved the college down to Indiana, grew that college incredibly. During, although not a nurse herself, she had some experience because she had worked with an uncle who was a doctor. She worked throughout the Civil War as a nurse. There are incredible stories of her scrubbing floors one day and the next day being in Washington using her family connections to get monies to be able to send to the hospitals. At the end of the Civil War, she comes out bedridden from exhaustion. By the end of her life, she's created 40 colleges, hospitals, and schools in India, Europe, and the United States, written a couple of textbooks, and moved St. Mary's into the first women's Catholic school in the United States. And
so how would somebody like that, that could obviously be a play all about themselves, how do you pare that down and mold it with the other ones?
I think you use highlights from her life, because I feel like we have three characters and a family of characters that could, each of them could be their own story. So Schuyler Colfax is another one of our characters. And of course, that's another vice president and a congressman and someone who had a lot of success and then a big failure in his life. Father Corby from Notre Dame is another one. Corby has a statue at Gettysburg for a speech he made at Gettysburg. We'll use that speech. But in that speech, he talks about how God is with you to his northern troops. Well, as a religious professional after the war, how does he justify to those Southern men that come to his school what he had said at that time? How does he justify it to himself? And so I think that there's interesting questions that we can raise across the board. And then we have the Baldwin family. We have a father, a son, a mother, and a daughter that are all four of our 11 characters in the play. The Baldwin family had a lot of tragedy in their life. They had four children. One died in infancy. Their son went off to the Civil War and died. One of their two daughters that reached adulthood, one of their two daughters had a child that died at 3 years of age. So they had lost that grandchild.
Gee.
That daughter died in the Civil War as a result of she was a nurse and she picked up an infection in one of the hospitals and died of that. The other daughter had a child that died in infancy. That was their other grandchild. So
this is not a comedy.
This is not a comedy. Although when you look at that, and this is something, you know, there's so many positive things and so many negative things that came out of this. There was so much happiness and then tragedy that came out of this. So I think here, and one of these characters I brought in at the very end, because I had the Baldwins and was only going to do three characters, the father, the mother, and the son who died in the Civil War. I decided to bring Elizabeth Baldwin in because Elizabeth Baldwin, even though she had in some ways the same tragedy as the rest of the family had, lost her only child named Ruth, and through her marriage into the Beardsley family. That's where Ruthmere came from.
I was going to say, that sounds very familiar.
That's where Ruthmere came from in Elkhart. And she was one of these people that swore and smoked and every night, every night on doctor's orders. Had champagne before she went to bed, and loved to go to Italy and loved life. In comparison to that, or opposed to that, is what happened to her mother, who, if you read her obituary, really became very reclusive at the end of her life, because other than her daughter, by that time, she'd also lost her husband and she was alone. And it really affected her negatively. So when you have that kind of tragedy, what do you do? How do you react to that? And some people overcome it and open up, and some people do not. Mm-hmm. And we want to be able to show that. So I think that I'm grateful for all the researchers that have been able to bring information.
I was just getting ready to ask you about researchers and if you've done all that on your own or if you've had help.
For me, I had to have that help. And I think that if you're dealing with a number of different characters, particularly from a rather large area, you need to have assistance in being able to put that together.
What time period is this going to cover? From what to what?
It'll cover from just before the Civil War to about 1890. So it'll cover about 60 years.
Wow.
I'm sorry, 30 years. From about 1860.
Your math is as good as mine.
Yeah.
About
1860 to 1890.
Okay. With a show like this, my brain goes all over as the potential director for a show like this. Are you thinking that you're setting it costume-wise, is it going to be very simple, or are you actually going to move people progressively through the eras, or are you going to be doing most of that? I know that you and I have talked about possibly doing rearview projection work and some other stuff. So how are you thinking about setting those moments to take people through the time?
Well, I want to mention this, for me, I think the important thing with the successes that I've had have been the collaborations that I've been able to put together and the people that I've been able to bring in. And being able to bring in Aaron Nichols as the director for this project was really important when I first started this. Aaron was the first name that had come to mind, and somehow he managed to find the time to be able to put into this. And it's significant time because it's something new. It's something that's being created now. It's something that Aaron has been intimately involved in. So that is something that we're really looking at. I think that what's great for a playwright is to be able to have a director to work with through the process. And
someone you trust.
Someone you trust, yes, of course. Having someone that... and this has unfortunately happened in the past too, having someone that doesn't end up being what you would hope for makes it incredibly difficult.
In writing this, one of the things that I would think would be a challenge is that you have all these different characters, and many of them, you know, coming from different backgrounds. And how do you find, in terms of the writing, the voices of these people? Because maybe some of them had actual audio recordings later on, but probably not many. And how do you know how they spoke? How do you write believable dialogue that is still understandable? We just did a project where we were researching letters, and you have to kind of get into it. Even 1860 even was a different dialect of English than we have today, yeah. Especially in the written word, and you have to look at that and say, okay, now how do you write for the ear when your ears weren't there?
Okay. Good question.
No, it's a good question. I think that's very difficult because it's something that I thought about really from the very beginning. How am I going to be able to do this? I think that I mentioned before that I've adapted a number of Dickens works.
Uh-huh.
And with Dickens, when those have been presented and I talk to the actors about that, you know, people say, you know, Dickens is harder to work with than Shakespeare is, really, in terms of what happens with the language. And
he wrote in dialect, though, in his mm-hmm. novels.
And so that makes it difficult to work with. Uh-huh. I'm just saying that I was conscious of that. I'm also conscious of the fact that I'm going to have to put this together in such a way that it's going to be interesting to high school students.
Sure, yeah.
And so I think that being able to get the dialect and the voice from that time period is less important than being able to get something that the students and the audience are going to understand and be interested in.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
We're all staring at each other.
I'd like to go back just because you had asked me about you know, how we were putting things together. Mm-hmm. And I went off on a tangent about how important Aaron was to the project. And I did want to mention that this was another consideration in terms of the students and if they were going to be doing a production. And how do you put a set together and make it work and make it something that then will be workable in a school environment?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I had originally thought about, and Aaron and I have spoken about a lot, is using the rear screen projection. Yeah. A lot of the buildings that we're dealing with from the Civil War still stand. And I am fortunate in having someone that can do a fantastic job with Photoshop and getting rid of all of the stuff that's been created after the Civil War.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to use that in the rear screen projection. We'll use some artifacts. We'll use some things that may have been some of the tombstones. Most of the people are buried in this area, and some of our characters have passed away by 1890. And so we'll be able to show that. We'll be able to show Silas Baldwin, the father, was responsible for the Civil War monument that was done in Elkhart. The story is that he helped form the committee, and the committee couldn't agree on how they were going to get the monument paid for. So he said, well, let me pay for the base. So he paid between $2,000 and $3,000 to have the base put together. And then they couldn't agree on the monument itself. And so he said, let me just pay for the whole thing. So he paid for the whole thing. But his son's name is at the top of one. Frank Baldwin's name is at the top of one side.
Yeah, and his picture is too.
And it's, you know, just another one of those kind of dramatic moments. Mm-hmm. Silas died knowing that the monument was going to be completed, but died just before the monument was completed in 1889.
Hmm.
So the rear screen projection we felt was important. We're looking for a barber chair that's old enough to be part of that. And of course, the students aren't going to have that. Well, we're going to have to find.
I'll show you the one I have in my basement, but I don't know if it's old enough for you, but I have one in the basement.
What about costuming?
We want to be authentic with costuming for the our production. I've spoken with people at Notre Dame and St. Mary's in terms of being able to assist with costumes from the time period for our professional religious. And it appears that they'll give us some assistance in being able to do that. We'll make use of the James Lewis Cassidy costume collection.
Remembering, of course, that people were a lot smaller back then.
I know.
Well, and willing to wear corsets and all that stuff as well. But I think it's great that you're able to actually make it a larger community event in a way by involving all these other organizations as well, mm-hmm. which is kind of where the whole thing with the end of the Civil War and all these commemorations began with us,
right.
And getting people involved. I think it was interesting that we came to you and you had already started thinking about it at that moment. So it was fortuitous for all of us.
Right. Right. Boy, I don't know. Do you have any more questions for Mike? Anything else you want to tell us about it? It's a huge undertaking, and I don't know, in your right now, of course, you're a couple, 3 months out from actual putting it on the stage. It's going to be here as well at our theater, the Bristol Opera House in Bristol, Indiana, in June, and then it will be in July at the
Fourth
of July weekend at the which is entirely appropriate, and so we'll hear about previews or something, or just at least get some inkling of what's going on with it in the meantime. So I know it's going to be a long-term work.
Michael, you've done this before though with other local historical events. I know. Because I know you did one, and I did not get a chance to see it, but I know you saw it, Marcia, over at St. Mary's. Was it not with the acting ensemble?
The acting ensemble, I didn't have anything to do with that particular production.
I thought you wrote that one as well. Okay, my fault.
Now, I have had I did a number of shows, but most of that work was for television. So I did a show called Studebaker Less Than They Promised, which was a history of the Studebaker Corporation and why it folded and whose fault that was, which raised, again, it was trying to raise questions and show the broad impact and really the broad fault that happened with. It wasn't just the union, but it was in part the unions. It wasn't just management, but in part it was management. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the physical plant, but in part it was the physical plant that they had been left with. So there were a multitude of different things that you try to bring together and make it interesting and dramatic.
Right.
But also maintain truth when it comes to it. And that's why I wanted to have for Heartland, the Civil War, I wanted to have real characters that I was dealing with.
There was a play that was done about Schuyler Colfax, because I remember that, but they did it like in the courtroom somewhere. Help me, because that was a while ago, and I don't think I saw it. I just knew the gentleman who was playing Schuyler Colfax.
Now, there was a video that was done on Schuyler Colfax that David Barrett did back in the mid-1970s. There's been a number of things that have been done about Colfax.
Right.
The tragedy for Colfax was that, and without going into it, he invested in some stocks that he shouldn't have invested in when he was a congressman. And what it cost him really was perhaps the presidency, because he was vice president for one term. And because this came up, he wasn't the primary person, but he was implicated. Because this came up, he didn't get the second term as vice president. And of course, it was the end of his political career.
So, well, thanks very much for joining us, Michael. We've been talking to Michael Beatty, who is the executive director of the Lifetime Education and Learning Research Network and RMB Productions. And you're also involved with the acting ensemble, which will be producing a production of Heartland. What's the full title?
Heartland, the Civil War.
Heartland, the Civil War. There you go. That's easy. And it's a history of Northern Indiana. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, they can get in touch with you via the website, right?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we may have some theater groups out there in our listening public that might be actually interested in learning more about your process. So thanks again for joining us on Theater Geeks.
All right. Thank you.
Before we wrap up here, we have to remember to tell you to go and visit our store.
Oh.
Right? Theatergeeks.com/store.
I almost brought my mug this morning.
You almost brought your mug. Okay.
I just brought my ugly mug.
Okay.
Oh, Marcia, whatever.
Marcia's favorite is the coffee mugs. I know that. Yeah, they hold a lot of coffee.
They're big,
and they keep it hot for a long time as well.
Do.
Anyway, so check that out. Also, remember that you can listen to us. We're available, of course, on iTunes. You can also find us on the Blueberry Network, spelled B-L-U-B-R-R-Y with Blueberry with no E's. You can also find us on Stitcher, On Demand Radio. We are on the...
ITV
on the TuneIn network, and we are also on Apple
everywhere.
TV. We're everywhere you
everywhere.
Would like to find us. We're on the Roku box and anything where there's podcasts, you can find us. So anyway, that's all from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.